Hello, Vancouver babes. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to Babe Waves. We are broadcasting from the UBC Point Grey campus on their traditional unceded Coast Salish lands of the Musqueam people. This is the third episode of Babe Waves, the sequel to Lady Radio, brought to you by the currently rebranding Women's Collective. I'm Brenna, and I'm here in the studio with my collective pals and comrades, Hayo, Rachel, Zoe, and Katie. So, as I mentioned last week, water rights and the clash between Indigenous activists and the state are on the forefront of conversation right now, or at least they were until Trump decided to decimate that one. So with the water protectors in North Dakota standing up against the Access Pipeline, and here in BC, where the movement against the BC Hydro Site C Dam is still being fought. So this past Saturday, Hayo, Zoe, and I attended the Water is Life, No Site C Solidarity Gathering and Prayer, which was held in conjunction with a prayer gathering in Fort St. John. The organizer, Christy, had been directed by elders to hold a gathering in Vancouver. So it was a pretty cool and rainy day in Vancouver in the fall, as it normally is, I guess. And we gathered in Crab Park on the waterfront to stand in opposition to the dam and to show our support for Treaty 8 Nations. It began with Elder Rose offering prayer and beginning the gathering. We then heard from speakers who had traveled from Treaty 8, as well as Vancouver-based First Nations activists who offered words of solidarity and encouragement and reiterated the importance of fighting against the dam and the importance of maintaining the environment as it is for First Nations rights. And then after we heard some speakers, there was a prayer by the ocean, and Christy was able to drop some of the water from the Peace River into the ocean as a moment of reflection and solidarity. We're gonna listen to a short recording of the event now.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Anthea, and I am of the Musqueam First Nations here in Vancouver. I am so pleased to be asked to come out here today to join you in prayer. And I have brought with me the calming, which is the cedar, the fire, and the tumuth, which is our dirt, and the water. So to help us through this ceremony of asking for prayer from each other, I would just like us to join in prayer to Creator. Your prayers in your own words. Grandmothers, grandfathers, thank you for our joining here today with all whom are in attendance. I ask you for courage and strength for each and every one of us as we go through our ceremony of helping out each other, particularly Christy, who's asked for prayer for her nation up in Fort Nelson, and so that I just would like to say a prayer for water, a water spirit. In our Aboriginal traditional teachings, First Nation women have a sacred connection to water. As we power through this blessed water, we nourish our children, our Mother Earth, and and our trees, flowers grow with all of our Creator's love. Our oceans, our rivers, our streams, etc. And I would like to end with the remembering all of our people that are in Standing Rock as well, all my relations.
I'm just going to ask one of our sisters who's here from our territory, Treaty 8 territory, Elizabeth, to come and speak. Just to give a little background on Elizabeth, she's the brave soul that ran in our territory for the Green Party. If you know anything about the area of Fort St. John, that is a very brave thing to do. And I don't know that we've ever had anybody elected other than conservative, but it was wonderful to have someone put themselves on the line just to get the issues voiced that don't get talked about in our area. So I'm very honored that she came here to speak with us.
Thank you. I'm very sorry I don't have this memorized. I just did this in the last few days and I work two jobs. And I unfortunately have to read off this and I wish I had it memorized for you. But I hope you enjoy. Good day everyone. My name is Elizabeth Bigger and I am an inhabitant of this planet. Today we talk about the implications of all of this. There was a time in this very spot where we stand that the threat of environmental destruction was never even thought of. It wasn't until the rise of capitalism and the insatiable hunger of corporations that the Peace River Valley was threatened. In all of the years of humanity, it is not until the very recent past that this piece of the planet is set for complete annihilation. As a child, I watched the activists at Clackwat Sound. I cheered for them. I was young, but I was aware. I knew the implications of environmental devastation, and I wished I could stand with those brave enough to face the pressure of the logging companies, the press, the police, and our own government. It took years and it took dedication, but they held back the destruction. The trees in Clackwat Sound are still standing. The protest in Clackwat Sound was at the time the largest display of civil disobedience in Canadian history. They did what had to be done. They showed up and were prepared to be arrested and ostracized to do what no one else wanted to do. Many of them were arrested, over 900 people, bound in handcuffs and held prisoner by the government of the country which they were defending. As history has shown, this activism is the only way to get things done. It all amounts to who is willing to push the hardest. We can talk and we can spread the word, but at the end of the line, whichever group is willing to face the fire the longest will prevail. Let us show the world we will stand facing the fire. The corporation has the upper hand with Sightsee, no doubt. They are bankrolled and lawyered up. They have government officials in their pockets and are corrupted to the very core. They make the rules as they go and have complete control of the referees. They don't have the public support. What stops this kind of tragedy from happening is an awakening of our population. When the people who would rather just live out their lives in scheduled boredom awake and see the importance of the cause, then the corporations will lose. Did you ever ask yourself how something like this could occur? We live in a democracy, right? We all have a say in what takes place around us, but we don't want the Sightsee Dam. We say we will not allow any more destruction of our home. We shout it from the rooftops that a corrupted government and corporate interests will not determine the natural wonder that is the Peace River Valley. The actions that we take from this moment on will determine the fate of the planet. Our planet sits in the balance. We are living in a time of complete excess, and the rate at which our society is understanding the implications of the fossil fuel lifestyle is moving much too slow, as we all know who are here today. Don't be fooled. What we are undertaking will not be easy, as you've seen the battle for the last 30 years. Look to North Dakota at Standing Rock. They are facing police oppression with a hands-off government approach. They are on their own. We are on our own. But know this, the outcome of the fight and the fight at Standing Rock and any fight that is for the preservation of the environment will be remembered throughout the rest of human history. I can say this with such certainty. If we lose this fight, we all will be remembered for the rest of history because our history will be a short one. If we can't come together as a people, as one voice on one planet, we'll never be able to stem the flow of global warming. But if we can turn the tide on the Site C project, other protests will follow. We can push back and stop the bleeding that is greenhouse gas emissions into our atmosphere. This can be a battle, this can be the battle, Site C, that changes the momentum of this war. If we win, and we will, then other communities in other parts of the world will think that they can win. If they can win, then maybe we have a chance at keeping this planet and our home a place where humanity can continue. We will be remembered for the sacrifices we make here. We are the turning point now. You are the warriors for our planet. You are the ones standing here to show that you are ready to fight. We will be peaceful, but we will be strong. We will not be broken. Let us show the world individuals can make a difference. Let us show the world we will not sit idle as destruction looms. Let us show the world that there is light in the darkness. That light is within each of you, and when we come together, it becomes a beacon that burns so brightly it cannot be ignored. It cannot be ignored no matter the legislation. It cannot be ignored no matter the arrests or the fines. It cannot be ignored by the bulldozers, the dump trucks, and the chainsaws. My name is Elizabeth Bigger, and I believe that if we stand united, we can stop this atrocity called Site C. Look at everyone that came out today. This battle is not over. Thank you.
That was Elizabeth speaking on behalf of Treaty 8 territory and First Nations in regard to Site C. So we're going to come back, we're going to take a quick break and listen to a song, and then we're going to come back and have a discussion with Zoe, and we're going to talk about Site C. But first of all, we're going to listen to A Tribe Called Red, Maima Kopi.
Discorder,
that magazine from CITR 101.9 FM,
presents a showcase of emerging Vancouver-based hip-hop artists Friday, November 18th at the Media Club.
The lineup is comprised of some of the most talked about and should be talked about hip-hop artists in Vancouver,
including So Loki, Missy D, Romy, Something August, Spotty Joseph, and Freeman Young, with CITR's Crimes and Treasons DJing and emceeing this 19-plus event.
We them boys! Be sure to come check us out. We're Crimes and Treasons Radio. We're going to be hosting and DJing at the Media Club. Be sure to come check us out.
Crimes and Treasons.
For more information and tickets, visit discorder.ca.
You are back listening to Babe Waves on CITR 101.9. I'm Brenna, and I'm here with my friend Zoe.
Hi.
Hey, Zoe. How's it going?
Really good. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thanks so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
So we're going to talk about Site C, which is the BC Hydro hydroelectric dam that's getting put in on the Peace River. Did you want to tell us a little bit about your project?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm a journalism student, and I'm doing a journalism project featuring the people who were involved in Fort St. John resisting Site C.
Awesome. So just a quick reminder of what is Site C, for those of you listening who maybe don't really know the whole thing. So it's the hydroelectric dam that HydroBC is building on the Peace River near Fort St. John, and it's the third dam on the Peace, built after the Bennett Dam and Peace Canyon. So BC Hydro says that the dam is going to create 5,100 gigawatt hours of energy each year, which apparently is enough to power 450,000 homes. So what do you have to say about that?
So much. There's a lot of different aspects to talk about Site C. There's probably about four really well-developed reasons why people are resisting the project. The first one is that no one seems to be convinced that we actually need the power. Residential demand for hydroelectricity power in British Columbia has been flat or decreasing for the last 10 years. And as prices increase, anybody who understands economics knows that demand is going to go down, and that's what's happening. There's a lot of alternative energy sources as well that are becoming more and more affordable for regular people. And so people are... It's possible for them to reduce their energy consumption. And also, industry demand hasn't really increased in the last 10 years for hydroelectric power. So BC Hydro is saying we need to have this $9 billion project, by the way, which is the largest infrastructure project in BC's history. And they're saying we really need a steady supply of hydroelectric power. And a lot of people, very intelligent, well-informed people, are very... suspicious of that claim.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, this claim itself, I mean, this quantification of a so-called natural resource, where are they seeing this power even going? Like, where is BC Hydro even projecting this power to go to? Is this something that, you know, this big corporation is coming in to central BC, to Territory 8, and kind of exploiting these resources without any of it it's always like comes back down to like, we'll be developing the region, it's going to help the region out. Is it actually going to go back into the region?
Yeah, no, not at all. It's actually a really interesting question to talk about where the power is going to go. Bill Bennett is the Ministry for Energy in British Columbia. He was recently interviewed in the Globe and Mail, and he quoted to them and said, our opportunity is to increase demand. So basically what they want to do is stop all of the hydro saving and power saving stuff and power smart things that hydro themselves have been promoting. And they want to just make people use more energy. It's ridiculous. And they are trying to encourage industry to use more electricity instead of other forms of power. They think that it's a really green form of power. So they want to get Alberta off the coal power, and so they're talking about building infrastructure to send the power from BC to Alberta. Alberta doesn't so far seem to be very interested in this. They've also really suggested that they're going to power the LNG industry, but the LNG industry has said, actually, we have liquefied natural gas, we're probably going to use our own power. We don't really need your electricity.
Yeah, Alberta's like, we got so much sitting underground that we can take. We don't need
and
yours.
I mean, maybe they would be convinced to use electricity, but they're going to demand a price that's equal to what they can already afford, which is a lot lower than what Site C would have to sell it at to make a business case. And so they're going to be selling at a loss no matter who they sell it to. And then BC ratepayers are going to be paying for the $9 billion, which a lot of people think is going to go higher. So rates are going to go way up in BC over the next handful of years.
Great. Get stoked for that.
Yeah, totally.
So with the infrastructure, I mean, with the building of the dam itself, what does that mean for the landscape and for the environment and for the people that live there?
Okay. So the Peace Valley, the Peace River kind of carves through this valley that is extremely fertile farmland. So a lot of people have farms and ranches. It's 83 kilometers between Fort St. John and Hudson Hope, which is where the reservoir is going to be. And it's going to flood at least 10 individuals' homes. And it would have been more, except since the 70s, they've been buying land because this project has been going on for 30 years. So it's going to flood land, which does a number of things. First of all, it's going to mean that we'll lose a lot of prime agricultural land. And because it's down in a valley, because it's an east-west running river, which is unique, it has a really long sunny day. It has a microclimate, and they can grow watermelons in Fort St. John. Like, it's really quite far north compared to us in Vancouver. And they have, it's a huge opportunity for food security that a lot of people are concerned about. And so there's that. There's also a really important wildlife usage in that area. It's a nesting area for birds. It's a calving area for a lot of different ungulates. A lot of First Nations people are very, they have a long, long history of hunting and trapping and fishing and gathering. And so a lot of those natural resources are going to be flooded away.
Right. That's one thing they did talk about at the gathering, was just how central the river is to the life of First Nations peoples and how much they do build themselves around the river. That was a lot of things that did come out of the talk for me. So in your work in the Peace and in Fort St. John, so I'm going to actually start this question with a statement that was made by one of the speakers, George. He said, "We will never stop fighting. Even after it's built, we will fight it." So where do you think people are at right now in terms of accepting it, not accepting it? What's the activism look like right now?
The activism is actually picking up, from what I can tell. After construction started, people were like, oh, this is actually happening. And they started to get more and more attention from around the province, around the country, and even internationally. And as for the people who are in Fort St. John, like, there's Ken and Arlene Boone are two farmers who will be flooded if the reservoir goes ahead. And they're currently being expropriated from their land because BC Hydro wants to realign the highway. And so it's basically going to go right through their home. And they're pretty firmly against it, and they're not giving up. And they may actually have to, like, be forcibly arrested and removed from their home because they're not going to go willingly. And they have told me that even if they lose their home and they actually are legally removed from their property, they're not going to stop fighting the dam. Arlene told me the first day I met her that they have until the day the water rises to stop it. So, and that will be in about 8 years.
Oh, okay.
So there's time.
Well, yeah, there is time. I mean, this dam has been, I mean, it's been kind of on the precipice of getting built for decades, hasn't it? I mean, mm-hmm. it was proposed, it was stopped, it was proposed, it was stopped. And then when Christy Clark came in, she decided to really push it through, right?
Yeah, I understand that it started with Gordon Campbell, actually. Okay. And then Christy Clark kind of really pushed it forward. And her famous phrase is that she wants to push it past the point of no return before the next election, which is suspicious. Gordon Clark was also recently, he was giving a presentation and he was interviewed and he said, yeah, when we approved it back in the day, like, it wasn't a very sophisticated process that we used to evaluate it, but we still stand by it. And we're talking about $9 billion. He's like, yeah, not very sophisticated, but we didn't care. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
I mean, like, it's this giant corporation that comes in. I mean, and this is kind of the story of BC Hydro, from what I understand, is they come in and they dam up everything. And I mean, who is this one affecting the most? You know, like, how does this affect, like, if we, because we are the Women's Collective, like, if we were to talk about gender and water, Can you speak to that?
Yeah. Actually, there was an Amnesty International report that came out just last week, I believe, that talked about the correlation between violence against women and resource extraction, specifically in Fort St. John. And so Helen Knott was one woman who was in the Amnesty International report. She's an Indigenous woman from the Prophet First Nation. She's a social worker in Fort St. John. She is, like, adamantly against the dam. And partly for her, she has a really spiritual connection with the river. She has been through a lot of difficult things in her own life, and through her own process of healing, the river was a really big part of that. She was taught by people in her life to go down and spend time at the river, and the river would kind of carry away your grief. And she spent a lot of hours by herself at the river and learning from it and connecting to it. And her family has been in that area for a really long time. So from a personal level, she'll be deeply affected, and other people like her. There's also a lot of women in the First Nations who still fish and trap, and their livelihoods are going to be affected.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, like, family connections with just even walking through the land and gathering berries, or there's little patches of sweet grass that are kind of hidden and most people wouldn't really find them, but they know about them. And then the industry aspect of things, where it brings in workers from out of town. And Hydro tried to say that a lot of the work would happen from local people, and they'll still say that the numbers are high, but the people you talk to in Fort St. John say that local people get hired and then they get laid off really quickly, so they think it's just kind of a numbers game. And we haven't really heard too many stories of people locally getting jobs there, but what that means is they're bringing in people from the outside. And the Amnesty International report really talked about how this propagates a lot of violence against women, because people kind of, they're working long shifts and then they have some time to kill and they go into town, and it can sadly turn violent. And so that's been documented a lot.
I mean, I think that, you know, we did see that a lot in Fort McMurray and other boomtown types, like resource exploitation type towns. Where, I mean, certain industries do end up proliferating from that. Did the Amnesty International report, did that also talk about the Highway of Tears and how that was also potentially?
I don't know if it specifically mentioned the Highway of Tears, because the Highway of Tears goes from Prince George out to Prince Rupert.
Okay.
So it's in a different part of the province, but they have had a high number of missing and murdered Indigenous women.
Right, okay.
In that area, so.
Okay.
And the other thing, like, Site C probably isn't directly affecting this issue so much, because they have a workers' camp that is keeping everyone separate from the town. So in this aspect, that's a good thing. But there's a lot of other resource extraction that happens in that area. Lots of gas wells and things like that. So,
right. So what does activism look like right now? I mean, how are people fighting this on a day-to-day? Is there anything that Vancouver-based allies can do to support and show solidarity?
Yeah, I think people up there would say the biggest thing is to learn about it and to talk about it, and I think their hope right now is to raise awareness, and they think that that's going to be able to change the political will to stop this down. There's an election happening in May, so there's a lot of focus on that from activists. There is two legal battles still waiting for the verdict to come through from two of the First Nations in Treaty 8. And they're hoping that that could actually stop the dam if they prove that BC Hydro didn't adequately consult with the First Nations according to treaty rights.
Mm-hmm.
So they are raising money to cover legal costs for that. So you can donate money to Raven Trust, which is an Indigenous legal organization. And the Boons, who I mentioned before, Ken and Arlene, their home is, like, there's a center stake for the highway that will be realigned, and it is right outside their kitchen window. I was there a few weeks ago, and, like, you look outside their kitchen window and there's a yellow stake. And so what they've done is they came up with this creative fundraiser called Stake in the Peace. So for $100, you can buy a stake, and around this center stake of BC Hydro's, they've got probably like 200 now other yellow wood stakes. And so, and then that money is also going towards legal costs for people who are trying to fight the dam.
That's awesome. A creative idea.
There's also, I know, I loved that. And it visually looks really cool, because it's like you literally have a stake in the ground right where Hydro thinks that they own the place.
And like a subversive view on stakes that are used all the time in industry.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, totally. And so There's also Fight C, I believe is a locally organized organization, and they've started a thing called Feast for the Peace. Is that what it's called? Maybe they didn't start it, because I know people up north are doing it too. But this is a thing where you gather together and you have food, and I think it's valuing the food security of the area, and so farmers are pretty happy about this one. So just mostly raise awareness, talk to your friends about it, learn about it.
Yeah, Feast for the Peace does sound really cool. I mean, who doesn't love a reason to have a potluck with wine?
Right,
with
exactly.
Your pals and, like, get political.
Take a picture and share it. And,
right, yeah, that's how that works.
Get political.
Yeah, that's
totally
how that works. Take a picture and share it.
Yeah.
I mean, it all works towards spreading awareness and, yeah, raising awareness. Great. Well, is there anything else you wanted to add?
There's so much, but not directly off the top of my head.
How did you, like, what inspired you to get into this line of work? Like, what speaks to you about this cause?
Well, the first time I actually heard about Site C, I think was a classmate of mine who just commented on how dumb it was, and I didn't really listen. And then I met someone in Prince George where I was working, and they said, oh, it's such a shame, that place is such a valuable area. And then I went up to Fort St. John and was working there. And I think the thing that really tipped me off is when I met the people who are being expropriated. And I was like, expropriation happens in BC? What? Like, first time I heard about expropriation happening in modern times, it was in Venezuela. And everyone who in the capitalist market was like, oh my gosh, this is the worst thing. The government is expropriating. You can't expropriate. Like, it's, you know, investor security, blah, blah, blah. And so then to find my own government doing it to people, it's shocking. And they're getting away with it because they've aligned the highway directly through their homes. And there's also a lot of questions about whether the highway actually needs to go through their home. And it doesn't even seem like the safest route, because it's all shale rock that this stuff is on. And that's another thing that they don't think the dam is actually going to last. These protesters, they don't think, because there's landslides all the time in the area because it's shale rock. It doesn't, it's like sandy, mm-hmm. silty soil. Anyway, so the highway that gives BC Hydro the right to expropriate because they need the land, people are like, I don't actually think it needs to be right through our house. It should be probably a kilometer back.
And that is one thing that often doesn't come up when we talk about these huge projects, is just the amount of infrastructure that goes along with it, and the amount of money and just the spread of infrastructure that does end up coming with it. It's never just the one project. It mushrooms and it balloons into all of these other kind mm-hmm. of more smaller projects that are still massively problematic for the industry, or for the environment and for mm-hmm. people. Yeah, well, I think we will end our discussion there. So I just want to thank you so much for coming in and talking to us.
Yeah,
I think
I'm really glad you guys are talking about this.
It's definitely something that doesn't get talked. I haven't noticed like a huge conversation, but maybe it's because I'm new to Vancouver. It doesn't matter. Anyways, yeah, thank you so much for coming in. Mm-hmm. That was incredibly enlightening and helpful, and I hope that it inspires some of our listeners. Yeah, so thanks to Zoe. We're going to finish this segment of the show by listening to a song by David Morin, and it's called Come Home. And then we're going to come back and obviously talk about the mess that is Donald Trump. I can say that, right? Yeah. Okay, here's David Morin, Come Home. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. We are broadcasting from the UBC Point Grey campus on the traditional unceded Coast Salish lands of the Musqueam people. We're just going to listen to a couple of ads and then come back and talk about Trump.
Media Democracy Days brings together media makers, activists, and educators to celebrate independent media and social change. Media Democracy Days is happening this year at the Central Branch of the Vancouver Public Library on November 15th and 16th. The event includes a community radio takeover of the Inspiration Lab on the 15th and 16th at the Central Branch of the Vancouver Public Library, and a full day of hands-on workshops, discussions, and collaboratively determined events on November 19th at SFU Vancouver's Harbour Center campus. This year's keynote speaker is Ryan McMahon of the Red Man Laughing podcast. The event is free to attend. Visit 2016.mediademocracydays.ca for a full program.
FM Vancouver Reloaded, playing your favorite tunes and mouth-humping your ear holes full of voice talk. Yeah, we do that.
Hello, Vancouver babes. You are listening to Babe Waves. So we've got a pretty full house in the studio right now to talk about Trump. I'm pretty excited for this. But first of all, Rachel is going to start off our discussion with a poem that they wrote.
Yeah. This is not titled, but this is a poem I came up with to just sort of process the feelings I'm having around the election. So here goes. The morning after, I feel American sin glaze over me, my people of color, my queer people, my trans people, my Muslim people, my women, my femmes. The empty in my body makes room for a fire, anger, hurt, fear, and disgust, all wound up of flame. It burns within us all. Feel our warmth, feel our light, cast away these white shadows, feel the fight, because you have left us no choice. We are here, we are ready.
Thank you, Rachel, that was so nice. I think Dora has questions to start us off.
Yeah, so this kind of discussion was a little spur of the moment. We didn't really have it planned, and then we all felt so strongly that I think it's really important that we talk about it. I'm going to start off with like a very simple question. Not everyone has to answer it, but just where were you when you found out that Trump had won the election?
So I'm amused by my own story, but I was intending to avoid the election sort of rollout, the result rollout, and I was actually at a CITR workshop. Brenna was there. Rachel was there for part of it. So it was our How to Produce a Radio Documentary workshop, and I was stoked that I was going to be there so that I could avoid watching it happen. And then sort of at the end, the workshop leader brought up, he's like, oh, we should check what the results are. And so we, like, communally checked them, and it was just this horrible moment, like, quite late at night on campus after we'd been doing all this radio documentary talk, and I was so excited about, like, all the things that we could do and all the stories everyone's going to be telling, and then we all sort of saw them, all the results, and all kind of, like, collectively groaned and then went our separate ways. It was unfortunate.
I was actually asleep, so I found out in the morning, but I had actually dreamt that Hillary had won. And so when I woke up and it was really dark, it was about 5 a.m. for my classes, I was like, oh, no, it's okay. Instinctually, I feel like I know the results already. And JK. So, yeah.
I was also at a CITR event. I was at Shindig, which is like our Battle of the Bands thing. So we're in a bar, and I was like kind of happy because I was like, Shindig will happen, and I'll like go home and like maybe I'll check it, maybe I won't. But after the final performer, someone was like DJing music, and they were like, cut the music, and they turned on the television, and we like all kind of sat around and watched Trump accept the election, I guess. And it was pretty devastating. Like, it was just sad. Does anyone else want to share?
Sure. Yeah, I was also on campus, but it was not in any way amusing to me because I had to wake up early the morning of because I had to work on an assignment. So I woke up at like 3 o'clock in the morning and I went to bed maybe at like midnight. And so I had like 3 hours of sleep and I was still working on the same assignment like late into the night, like alone in a computer lab in like a corner of campus. And I just like couldn't even, like I couldn't focus on doing the assignment, but I like couldn't like leave and just it was horrible. And then I just left eventually and I just like started bawling on the bus home and it was like just the worst. It was the worst.
How many of us here are Americans, do we know? I know I am, so that's uno. Cool.
Solo uno.
Just me. Cool. Okay, just because this is right now the currently called Women's Collective at CITR, how gendered do you think this outcome was? Like, because I thought in my brain, I was like, it's so obvious she's so much more qualified. The Electoral College will not let this buffoon win. And then the Electoral College is like the reason that he was able to win as she won the popular vote and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And also 53% of white women voted for Trump, which like doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind.
No, I think it's definitely gendered, like 100%. Yeah. And I don't think that I doubted that before, but this definitely confirms it, like absolutely. And just also it's, I don't know, I guess I just like think a lot about like just, yes, like a lot of women voted for him, but there's also just like a lot of like what, you know, what is our idea of being a leader in general? And that is still very gendered. And I don't think that, that's really changed.
Just adding on to that, the whole rhetoric around Hillary being dishonest and untrustworthy is definitely a rhetoric that's been used against women for centuries. And the whole emails thing was definitely gendered and painting Hillary as an untrustworthy person, and her words could like were just automatically false. I think that's definitely linked to her gender.
Yeah, and I think it's important, I'm just building off of what Claire said, is that I remember reading an article saying that Hillary Clinton is one of the most honest candidates running, actually, and they did fact checks on what she had said. But this is more of a question that I wanted to pose, is I wonder why there were so many women who supported Donald Trump as presidential candidate, despite the things that he had done and the things that he had said that were obviously misogynistic and awful and predatory. And so I don't really understand, and that's just a question that I have.
I actually have like a moment where I kind of like realized this. I don't know about you guys, but I watch like the Snap stories a lot. Like they have like they had an election day. They had like dog surfing day, which like might have been my favorite. But they kind of like celebrate things by documenting events on Snapchat. And on the election day one, there was a woman kind of like selfieing, and she was like, "I would rather have a misogynist, arrogant, racist bigot as a president than a criminal." Like this idea that Hillary Clinton like is a criminal, like they did such a thorough job of positioning her in this way that like people were convinced, like it was effective, it was scarily effective.
And onto that, the fact that people don't see rape, assault, and harassment as criminal behavior.
Yeah.
To me, that is criminal.
Yeah. Oh, he's a literal criminal. She has been investigated so many times and has never been, like, she's never been found guilty. He has been, like, explicitly, like, criminal and, like, nothing has happened.
Yeah. I think that the most frightening thing about it is it shows how normalized people are to that kind of behavior and how in, like, those women's minds, like you said, like Trump's behavior is not criminal. Like there, it's something inherent that men do to women, and it's just the way men are, and like that kind of perpetuating of those ideas. And those women, I think, are interested in staying in a comfort zone where they know it's kind of like they know that as conservative people, their ideals won't have to change under Donald Trump, and they're comfortable giving, you know, continuing to give up their autonomy and their ability to be seen as people in favor of that comfort of conservative thought. And I think it goes hand in hand, like unwilling to like criticize or question your own internalized misogyny, or like question the misogyny going on around you, or even put into question like whether you are in fact like threatened or in danger. Like I think it takes a lot of energy and education sometimes to kind of realize that there are bad things being done to you by patriarchal power. And like that's a whole level of questioning that I think people aren't willing to go into.
Definitely. Yes, I was going to say something similar. Not willing to go into, but also, I mean, like talking about the access to education that like everyone sitting in this room has had the opportunity to like access these discourses and like critically analyze the structures that we live in. And like we have to recognize how much of not only a privilege that is, but also how uncommon that is. Like, I think it's very easy, and I think a lot of us are lucky because we can be in very supportive spaces having these conversations at this time. But that's not something a lot of people have access to. It's also not a way that a lot of people think and analyze and consider the political situation. Like, most people's day-to-day aren't structured or, like, don't involve extensive discussions of, like, gender theory.
I've spoken to some people who I thoroughly disagree with, who are actually quite close to me, and they said that there's a lot of things that Trump says he's going to do, and I do think he'll do them, but they think, like, oh, yeah, he just says that, but I don't think he'll actually follow up on that, and that's a problematic way to think about it. Just because, like, if it does happen, then you're not really doing anything to combat that. So, yeah.
And I think, like, the thing that people have to understand is that there are certain things during, like, I'm pretty sure during the campaign, and, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but when the person who's campaigning can't make false promises, that's part of how the election cycle works, is that there are policies that you're intending to enact. And the fact of the matter is that Hillary's policies were far more geared towards, you know, safety of LGBTQ people and women's rights and education and the environment. And Trump's policies are, you know, attacks on ISIS, attacks on radical Islam, which can so easily degrade into racism. And he openly made statements about wanting to build the wall between the U.S. and Mexico, and he openly made statements about Mexican people, and it's frightening that he said them, and it's frightening that it's part of his policy, and it's also frightening that people were like, yes, I believe that we should attack certain groups of people because of their inherent evil.
Do you mind if I'm just going to ask another question, just because we're kind of running a little low on time? So the last question that I have, that I was kind of talking to a few people before, but do you think, like, Hillary conceded and she was like, we need to rally behind him. I read this article. She wore a purple pantsuit that was red and blue, kind of like coming together, being kind of whole. Obama called for everyone being unified behind the results of the election. Do you think that the U.S. can accept these results? Because I really don't. There are already so many protests happening right now. Not too many have gotten violent. But, I mean, there are people saying they'll never call Trump president. I'm not going to call him president. I refuse. Like, he, like, so does not embody anything that I think that America is and, like, could be. He's making it non-great. Callie, who's also on the collective, wrote something on Facebook that I thought was like that, like really beautifully articulated what I was thinking. Like, as an American, when I travel, I definitely get a lot of like, well, like, you're so like religious. You're like, I'm usually thought of as like less intelligent than I think I am. Like that I love burgers, like country music, whatever. Which is like unfair, but whatever. I don't really care. It's like, I know I'm smart. I know that America's like not awful. But I was genuinely embarrassed to be an American, which I have never, like, I've always kind of tried to be a little bit more above it. But this was like too much for me.
Yeah, I think that the unity thing is a hard question because what he ran on was absolutely not unity. There was none of that in anything that he promised. Like, it was all the exact opposite. So I feel like everything that he said before, like, whatever the discourse is now, it's not possible. Like, he already gave his word to all of this other stuff, and it literally trumped, like, everything that followed. Like, I think it just will, like, and I think that that's already coming out in how people have reacted and the really violent actions that are occurring towards people of color, Muslim people, all sorts of things.
I think also so what I've read so far is a call for critique on the idea of unity and you know, in a way that critiques unity as like being not like as being kind of complacent or something, and like and kind of encouraging vigilance and really like starting the work from here, like, because I like, you know, like, what is unity except another rhetoric, another discourse that deserves to be critiqued? And I think, like, because I think that where it's coming from is like an emphasis to be unified with this other, you know, and like as a way of showing empathy. And I think from what I've read, my understanding is to critique this and start working and start the real activist work, mm-hmm. and never get complacent. I had a boss once who's been working for abortion rights for 30 years, and she once told me, she said, never, ever, ever get complacent because they will take it away from us. They will mm-hmm. take it away. Absolutely. And so I think that's so far what I've read. This is where the work starts and to critique unity.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like all of my values have come into question with this, and they're really being threatened. And never have I ever felt like what I believe in and standing up for that and fighting for that is more important. It's just more important than anything right now.
What I find like pretty almost funny, I know I use the word funny in a weird way a lot of the time, but what I find pretty funny about it is that he was like, let's make America great again, and like his idea of great was like so like totally removed from like half of the country's idea of like what greatness for the United States is. But I do think he ran so much on like divisiveness and division, but he unified a group of people who thought they were incredibly, like, they were like, finally, here's a representation that we've always wanted. Like, I do think it's especially strange for me, like, what's kind of come out of this is like, oh, like, the country was already divided. All of a sudden, there's this whole part of it that I either ignored or wanted to ignore. But I don't know if I can really unify with, like, that, like, group within the country.
I mean, I think what I find especially terrifying is in his victory speech or whatever, he was saying things like, we have to remember that we are a movement. So what he's doing with this language is appropriating the language of our communities, of our activist communities, and appropriating it for racist, misogynistic, like heteropatriarchal, like, you're not a movement, bud. Like, that's not a move. It's not a movement. Like, racism cannot be a movement. A movement is inherently political. It is inherently forward thinking. Like, and that is what I find terrifying, is the fact that this rhetoric, this racist, gets couched in political movement language.
I think the results from the election are really just a numerical representation of really what's been going on for so long now, but because we've made a lot of progress in our own communities, it's really hard to see that there's a lot going on outside of our communities, and especially being in BC, it's not privileged, it's how it should be, that we sometimes forget that this is how it is in the States, and a large proportion of the people in America are still, you know, terrible. And there's obviously a lot of work to be done. So I think in a way this will be good for everyone to force people to work harder and know that there's a lot of progress that needs to be made.
Yes, I think it's coming to the end. So I would like to invite Rachel to read their last poem that they wrote. It's not long, right? So you can.
No, it's
are you,
not.
You're willing to do that?
I am. I was actually going to end on a different note, but I think this is a perfect way to end.
Okay.
It, so
okay.
Thanks.
I'll let you finish it up then.
Yeah. Okay. Reality is my body laying on quicksand, sinking deeper each day until I suffocate in this fever dream. But my community is a rope, and my love is the will to breathe. Sand will turn to silk and dream into day. I will survive. I will breathe again.
Great. Thank you. So I think we're going to finish. I'd just like to thank everybody for being in the studio. I think that was really productive. And even though you couldn't see it or hear it, whenever somebody spoke, everybody around was like viciously nodding in agreement. I wish you could have seen it. So we're going to finish with an overall pick that everybody agreed on, which is Solange. Everybody is hailing the real queen. Thanks for listening, everybody. Babe Wave, CITR, 101.9 FM. We look forward to meeting with you again next week.
Such still owe me bucks, so I got the right to get bucked, but I try not to let it build up. I'm too high, I'm too better, too much, so I let it go, let it go, let it go.
I ran into this girl, she said, why you always blame it? Why you can't just face it? Why you always gotta be so you.
be mad about. Got a lot to be a man about. Got a lot to pop a stand about. I used to rock hand-me-downs, and now I rock standing crowds. But it's hard when you only got fans around and no fam around. And if they all, then they hands is out, and they pointing fingers. When I wear this fucking burden on my back like a motherfucking cap and gown, then I walk up in a bank, pants sagging down, and I laugh at frowns. What they mad about? Cause it come this motherfucker with this mass account that didn't wear a cap and gown. Are you mad cause the judge ain't give me more time? And when I tipped the suicide, I didn't die. I remember how mad I was on that day. Man, you gotta let it go before I get up in the way. Let it go, let it go.
Ran into this girl, she said, why you